Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Welcome back to Nighttime Talk with Gary Brennan in for Niall Boylan tonight. Loads to come on the programme, so do stay with us. Later on at about 11:30pm, I'll be sitting down with Jordan Dargan, Dublin's very own contender on this year's The Apprentice on BBC. At just 22, Jordan is the youngest contestant ever to take on Lord Sugar's Search for a Business Partner. From watching the show as a kid to now competing for a £250,000 investment in his animation business, don't miss his incredible story that's coming up at 11:30. Later on, we're also going to be talking about Ireland and the way we act when we're out in public. Have we lost our manners? That's going to be a good one. I'm getting already loads of texts and calls in about that one. And also, before the break, we were talking about Ireland being an ageist society, and we got a great point just before I move on to our next topic. I wanted to run it by you from John, who called in to mention that it is in fact illegal to force somebody into a nursing home. I think our callers were talking more around the idea of forcing them in terms of guiding them in, but it is illegal to force someone into a nursing home, and for all help and support, all that information is on online. So if you're in a situation and you're uncomfortable with it, or you see that something else looks a little bit fishy, go do search it out, because there are protections available. Okay, on to our next topic, and this one's going to be a big one. It's been on the lips of everybody, certainly in the commentariat, but also amongst the citizenry of the country. It's always a touchy subject when it comes to international neutrality, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. It's more on the defence end of things, because we want to know, should Ireland spend more on defence? It's a debate that's gaining momentum at the moment, both home and abroad, given the state of affairs in the world since Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine nearly 3 years ago. Many European countries have ramped up their defence budgets. At a security summit in Munich last week, Taoiseach Simon Harris said he believes that all European nations, including Ireland, will need to invest more in defence and security. But not everyone agrees. There's been strong public resistance, with opposition politicians accusing the government of trying to weaken Ireland's long-standing neutrality. So where do we stand? Should Ireland increase its defence spending, or is it a step in the wrong direction? Let us know your thoughts on WhatsApp 0871880008, or get involved on social media on Facebook at Ireland's Classic Hits and on X at Classic Hits Radio. I'm going to go to Mike, because you believe that we should be spending more.
Gary, how are things?
Great to talk to Mike. Go ahead.
Same as that. I think we should spend more, because the people are joining the boat, what do they call them? The guys walking the boat. So the people are not the good people are joining them, right? But big time, yes, and that they should cheer. Like, I come from near the coastal area there now, and I hear an awful lot about the fishermen there, and that the Irish boats used to be checking the Irish fishing boats all the time, rather than watching the boats that are bringing in the drugs, that they were checking the wrong stuff. They'd want to prioritise the way they do their work like this. That would be my thing in it. Like.
Well, you're talking about the naval service, Mike, are you?
And
don't we have some issues sometimes from time to time with Russia out in waters that are near to our coasts and that? And we have trouble scrambling around that, and we have to usually use the UK for information.
Yes, of course, yeah, for gathering information. So, instead of harassing the Arnie Irish fishermen around Castledown Bear and South Kerry and West Kerry and up the Clare coast, that it's they should specialise in monitoring what's happening in these U-boats and these boats that are bringing in all the drugs and all that crap. Like, but
we could spend more money on the naval service in the defence budget to do the things that you're talking about around the coast of Ireland?
I would think so, yes. I would agree with it wholeheartedly. But they're finding it very hard to man the ships now, aren't they? They can't get the staff to man the ships. Where when I was going to school, like, to be in the Navy was a big job. Like, you know, back in the 80s and 90s, like, the Navy was one of the top jobs you could have in the country. But apparently now the people aren't joining. I'm like, so it's a double-edged sword. Like, okay, yeah, I agree that we need to invest money in protecting the likes of drugs and these naval ships that are and scurrying the seabed, like, to see what they're on about. But what's the point in investing the money then if they keep people in there to run the boats?
Yeah. Yeah, no,
there's only one boat. There's only one boat in the water at the moment, is it, I think? One or two boats?
Yeah, do you hear reports, Mike, about people that are working in the naval service and they're saying that there's an awful lot of problems with the ships and they need investment? And that's, I think, where this is coming from, because our defence budget for 2025 is $1.35 billion and it's a record amount for the country. So the government are listening, but compared to other countries, it's not massive. And I want to get David's opinion on this. David, I have you online too. And you think we've the wrong attitude to defence forces in the first place?
Completely. The politicians, in Ireland are just like Starmer. Starmer is a complete idiot. He recently said that we should put British troops on the ground in Ukraine.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is that currently the British Army, which is about 76,000 strong, couldn't put into the field a single division, fully armed and fully with all the kit it requires. 30,000 men with all the tanks. An armoured division is 429 tanks. The British Army have got about 100. It's an utter joke. And the Irish are just the same. The Irish have just bought three new patrol craft from New Zealand. They're probably superb boats coming from New Zealand and dealing with the waters they had to deal with. They're probably absolutely excellent. Sorry, for what it's worth, I used to be in the Royal Navy myself.
I remember, I've talked to you before, David, and I'm glad to speak to you tonight because you have a bit of experience in this area. And from an Irish perspective, whatever about the UK, from an Irish perspective, do you think it's money well spent?
Well, no, it isn't, because the fact of the matter is that if you, I wouldn't be at all surprised, and I don't have any numbers to support this, that if you actually looked at Irish citizens who join armed forces, you've probably got more who join the American military or the British military, because you've got greater opportunities.
There's more of a career projection.
Absolutely, yeah. There's an ex-commander or something, commandant, who's a TD at the moment, who keeps on complaining about the fact that Ireland is using the Royal Air Force to defend its airspace on an unofficial basis, and this infringes the Irish neutrality. But if Ireland wanted to put together a defence, some fast jets to sit on a runway to interdict the Russian aircraft, they've got to have the radar systems, they've got to have the planes, they've got to have enough pilots to keep at least six or eight active at any one time, which probably means they need to have about 30 or 40, because these pilots, to keep them in the military or to keep them in the Irish military and wanting to sit at the end of a runway for a year for a couple of hours a day, for somebody who's a fast jet pilot, that's not going to keep them interested for very long. But if they could go over to America and do the Top Gun course, they could go to whichever, have a relationship with the German Air Force, the French Air Force, whatever, the Swedish Air Force. And so they could do swaps with these other nations. But you'd need to have a very large force.
So what you're saying, David, is that the old nugget that you always hear is that, say, when, and it happens quite a bit, that the Russian fighter jets will come into our airspace. We ring the UK, the RAF scramble jets to kind of escort them.
No, the RAF would already be there.
They'd already be there. Okay, well, you get where I'm going. And they escort them out. And we say in Ireland that we shouldn't have to ring the UK to do that. We should be able to do it ourselves. But your point is that to do that, it's a whole thing. It's not as easy as buying two planes and just leaving them there every day. There's a whole huge investment in that.
Yeah, can you imagine if you spend probably 6-8 years training a fighter pilot to be able to do the job, but then you want to return on that sort of 10-12 year return on that investment? Can you imagine that somebody who's gone through that 5-6 year training course probably cost something in the region of $100 million to train a pilot. It's about the same. It's about the same to train a pilot as it is to buy the aircraft. But somebody who's of that switched on and that energized with life, he's not going to be happy stuck in Donegal at the end of a runway for 12 years every morning for a couple of hours.
So you're saying it's practical to depend on the UK for instances such as that?
Yeah, in anything, if you're in any business or any walk of life, you know, if you've got 100 acres and you want it, if you've got 100 acres of hay and you want it chopped, you don't go and buy a combine harvester yourself. You hire one in or get a contractor in to come and do it. You outsource stuff. Now, if you're a small country like Ireland with a 4.7 million population, you've got a military, I think it's what, about 7,000 people with about 3,000 in the reserves?
Yeah, whatever. We can check that. Go on, David. Yeah, we can check that.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is that you cannot afford to have enough jets to do what we're talking about. I'm guessing, and I've got no background knowledge whatsoever to say this, but you must be looking in the best part of sort of 15, 20 billion just to do the air interdiction of the Russian aircraft.
Well, that's one aspect of it, David. I want to get your opinion on the other aspects, I suppose, of what defence would mean. And we're not just talking about in the air, we're talking in the sea. And we need subsea awareness, don't we? We need to know what's going on in our waters and at least have good radar. We can't rely on the UK for everything.
Ireland has got a massive coastline. If you walk down, go and walk the coast, and you see all these lovely nooks and crannies all the way up. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of miles. If you've got a little rubber boat, you could bring in drugs. And we all know millions of drugs, millions of euros worth of drugs comes in through Ireland every year. And there's the only way that the military and there's no way you could patrol it. I did in fact patrol these coasts back in 76 and 77 on HMS Penelope and HMS Crofton, I think it was. Anyway, but yeah, you're in a ship doing 12 knots. There's however many thousand miles of coastline. You're going to need a lot of ships to do that. And that's 30, 40 blokes on each ship. Now, your current naval service can't even put a ship to sea to man the guns. They've got nobody in the current naval service who can operate the weapons on board these new patrol craft from New Zealand.
So what should we do, David? What should we do? If we don't spend money and invest on things like this.
You've got to treat the people in the services better. Certainly what I heard was that the guys were not well treated. They were expected to do this, that, and the other. And it was not whether they were doing weekend work or whether they were doing weekday work. They were still being paid the same sort of money as you would get in just an ordinary job. So if you are presenting, and you've got to give them opportunities, so they would have to have some sort of exchange relationship with other militaries. So you could have chaps who go off and join work with the American, the Italian naval service, and the American and Italians come here. But you'd have to offer something to the Italian Regio Mariner to actually think that they'd be worthwhile doing such an exchange visit with Ireland.
That all costs money, David. But that all costs money.
Everything costs money. And if you've got to work out, cut your costs to what you want to pay for it. So set out your budget first and then decide what you're going to do. And you might well be better buying in. You know, if you go and stand on the gates of the Royal Navy dockyards and offer retiring petty officers, ordinary ranks, whatever, 2-3-5-year contracts, come over to Ireland, give them a decent house, give the families a good education, whatever, and a nice sort of high 5-year holiday break from the end of the something like that. And you might find that, and then you'd have fully trained people jumping on board who are just, if they've got a limited scope in what they're going to do, they're going to jump on board, sail around the shores, and then come back and then go home again. At the end
so invest in the people first. David, I want you to stay with me. I have to take a quick break, and I've got Emmanuel and Gavin.
Yeah.
I've got Emmanuel and Gavin as well waiting to get in, so there's plenty more to come on this. Should Ireland be spending more on defence? We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Thanks.
Here on Nighttime Talk. Welcome back to Nighttime Talk with Gary Brennan in for Niall Boylan. Before the break, we were asking the question, should Ireland spend more on defence? I've got David still on the line. I'm going to get back to David because he has some experience in this area, but I'm going to go to Gavin on line two, who thinks that we should be investing in all security, Gardaí, not just defence forces. You're very welcome to the programme, Gavin.
How are you doing, Gardaí? How's things?
Good
evening.
Good. Go ahead.
Gardaí, yeah, now look at the defence forces, let's be honest, the pay of the recruits is not the greatest, you know, over the years it's always been an issue. I know it has gone up, but we should be investing in probably paying the staff more and recruiting more soldiers and stuff like that into the forces. And yet new equipment is needed, but we have a lack of Gardaí. We haven't got enough Gardaí on the streets of Dublin and around the country. Particularly, as you know, with the knife crime increase in the city and the crime that's going on. We need to be investing in security within the city of Dublin and across the country. I mean, it's threats to inside Ireland that is a problem, you know. At the end of the day, you look, you know, the Justice Minister has, Jim O'Callaghan has confirmed that he's aware of reports of an Islamic terror threat on St. Patrick's Day that Interpol are investigating. We need to be giving Air Gardaí the resources they need to investigate into these things and the equipment they need to deal with on the streets of Dublin. You know, they're going out and, you know, a lot of the time, Gary, look, I'm a Dublin City Councillor, I see these things on the street, I'm a taxi driver as well. Gardaí to be going up to apprehend people with a baton and a torch, you know what I mean? Like, you know, and they'd be going into serious situations. They don't have the equipment, they always have to call for the ERU to back them up, do you know what I mean? And it's just, as I said, we need to be investing in security all across the board in the country. Do you know, it's not just the defence forces. But yeah, some new equipment is needed. But as I think it was David there was speaking, I think it's the English Army, is it? They send over planes when there's a threat from
the
abroad.
The RAF help out, yeah.
And I think that's always been the case. We should have our own planes, in fairness, to look after our own seas, but that's just the way it is. We're just not a big enough, strong enough army anyway as a country, but we're a neutral country, and I want us to stay a neutral country. You know, at the end of the day, I don't agree, I don't want to be part of an EU army or anything like that. I want to stay a neutral country. The problem with Ireland, Gardaí, is it gets involved in too much foreign policies, overseas policies, and sticks its nose in a lot and doesn't worry about the problems with inside Ireland at the moment. We need to be investing in our own country and our own security.
I know from doing this show and talking to people that there's an awful lot of dismay from the public about the government getting so involved in international affairs and not really looking after their own problems back home. And you believe that we should be spending more on the Gardaí and the Defence Forces overall. And what would you say to people who are listening in tonight saying, all we ever hear is that Ireland is so rich and we've so much money and there's a great tax take here and there, record this, record that, but yet we don't seem to be ploughing the money into the things that matter, like our Gardaí and our services and our defence forces. What would you say to people like that?
I'm delighted you said that, Gary. I'm actually delighted you said that. That's the reality of it. The problem with Ireland is, you know, an example of the overseas problems, you know, they've been hammering at Donald Trump for so long. They have to remember in Ireland that a lot of it, 1 in 8 euro comes from 60% of their corporation tax, 60%, you know, comes a lot from these multinational companies. You know, 14 billion of the Apple tax, you know, that we took into the coffers. And rather than give off one-off payments in budgets that don't help people, because come January when you get an extra 10 euro or whatever in your pay, we all know broadband goes up, the bin charges goes up, everything goes up in price, people can't afford it, and the rents are sky high. To buy a house, it's shocking, 450 grand for a box in town. You know, they call some of them affordable, they're not affordable. So for a rich country, we know that our people, and I'm telling you, as a local councillor of Fingus and the Ballymun LEA, my people are struggling. They can't afford our basic bills. And with the Irish government, We've took in, as we would always say, thousands upon thousands of migrants from other countries and put them in hotels and stuff across the country. Well, we are not looking after our own. We've over 15,000 people getting in emergency accommodation and homeless people. We've elderly people being forgotten about. We're not housing our own. Like, you know, we haven't got enough beds in addiction, you know, like recoveries for people that want to come off drugs. I mean, our answer is let's build inject centres. That's not a proper answer. We should be investing in proper recovery centres for beds for people that want to come off drugs and give them the proper help. We are not investing our money where it should be. For a rich country, our people are struggling. And it's a fact. And people are angry about it. And a lot of people's kids will never own the home because of the way the government operates. We've a lot of land, and the government should be building thousands of social and a really affordable home. An affordable home is not 450 odd grand. An affordable home is about 250 grand. You know yourself, Gary, it's about what people can and can't afford. The fact is, not everybody in the country is a high-paid tech worker or a pharmaceutical worker on 100-odd grand. We have people that work in Costa or Dunnes or McDonald's and factory workers. And let's be honest, they're on 28 to 30-odd grand. But you can't afford to rent it. They call cost rental 1,700. You know, you are looking at Google giving out these 46 apartments. Well, a starting off nurse, I think, is only on 29 or so, or a teacher. How does that afford a cost rental apartment? It's not good enough.
So what you're saying, Gavin, is that the government just needs to spend more money. They have it and they need to spend it. And you're not opposed to it being spent on defence once they get the other things right as well.
Exactly. But there's a lot of issues. The vulture funds, Gary. We're allowing vulture funds to come in to buy up blocks of apartments, competing with people trying to buy and rent houses. The government are not. So they're giving money for overseas. They sent money for Palestine and other countries. And now they want to upgrade the security defence. They're not spending the money on the much needed resources that's needed for the people and the Gardaí. We need to recruit more nurses and doctors. We haven't got enough of them in the hospitals. There's not, the overspend on the children's hospital is disgraceful. But let's be honest, hopefully it's the best children's hospital in the world. It should be for that, because it's the dearest one. But this is the problem we have. You know, you go into the matter or the Bowmount, there's people and trolleys to beat the band. How can a rich country be having that? It's not good enough, Gary. We're not spending the money where we should. But yeah, the ministers, to give themselves extra money. Do you know that the government, I think they gave themselves 25 grand each extra for security for themselves? I think it's something like that. What's going on? Their salaries are increased at ridiculous, astronomical pay for TDs in this country, while the average person is struggling. You put the money into the services that's needed. That school places for special needs kids, carers, people struggling, helping them with their bills, helping people get social and affordable homes and healthcare and education. These are the things that need it. And the Gardaí, give them the proper equipment to tackle the crime that's on the street. We need to reduce knife crime and we need to reduce crime in the city. I'm sorry for giving out, Gardaí, but we've a lot of issues. And
no,
I think the government could them if they want it, but they don't want to tackle them.
Look, that's what Nighttime Talk is all about, giving you the voice to say how you feel. And, you know, that's what it is. And I'm just reiterating what a lot of texts coming in tonight and are saying. They're saying, fine, spend the money on defence, but get everything else right first. Stay there, Gavin, and take a second to yourself. I want to get Emmanuel in on this. Emmanuel, you're very welcome to the show. Should Ireland spend more on defence? What says you?
Yeah, well, what I like to do is think about history, because I think it was Winston Churchill said that the further you look back, the more you can see into the future. And if you look back at Irish history, we suffered centuries of abuse because we couldn't defend ourselves. The first priority of any state is the capacity to defend itself against attack. So I would suggest that because we don't have an enormous amount of money to spend, I believe that one of the approaches we could take is the defence forces to familiarise themselves with all modern weapon systems around the globe in such a manner that if we needed, we could get weapons in quickly and we would be highly trained. One of the problems Ukraine had was that they weren't trained in some of the weapons that they needed when they were brought in. They had to be trained up, whereas our military could be familiar with all weapon systems, which means we could act quickly in terms of our defence. But I would also suggest, too, that it's one thing to defend a country, but you must also have a strike capability for anyone who attacks us. So, in other words, we would have to have, while we can remain neutral, of course we should remain neutral, I'm absolute on neutrality. But Austria, for example, is a neutral country, but they have huge, a good army and a lot of defence systems. So what we should do is really, within the limits of our budget, we should have a capacity to defend the state. We keep away from international alliances. Of course, we can cooperate at various levels with the different military, like NATO and the French and all the different military systems, if we need them at a certain point. But we should just have a basic system of defence for ourselves.
A lot of people listening in tonight, Emmanuel, are saying to themselves, protect ourselves from who? We don't have a natural predator in that sense. There's nobody who is threatening to invade Ireland, geographically or politically.
Well, our neighbours across the pond invaded us for centuries and abused us in a horrific manner. We had the catastrophic starvation of the famine. In 1845 to 52, we lost 1 million people who starved.
Absolutely, Emmanuel. I know that's the checkered history of the relationship across the water. But right now, in the modern world, we don't have any threat of invasion.
Just to accentuate the point, for example, in the modern world, we didn't expect Russia would invade Ukraine. So everything is changing at the speed of light now, and all kinds of arrangements are being made over people's heads. For example, Ukraine is being put under pressure. But I would draw your attention to the 2023 Munich the International Security Conference. There was a Professor Sims in the audience, and I think Leo Varadkar was Taoiseach then at that conference. And I believe there was a remark made by Professor Sims. He said that if the United Kingdom came under threat, that they'd come back into Ireland. That can be checked on the International Security Conference. So we can never assume that everything is in a different place than it is. History tells us that you must always be ready for the most unusual events to occur, and they do occur, and we're looking at it in our live as we speak, all the international machinations regarding different countries and who wants to take over who and wants to rob whose minerals and so on. And with climate change, which is an added danger, which means that countries that can't supply their own food and so on. For example, I think last year, the year before in Romania, the corn was drying in the ground and they went down 3 foot and could find no water. I don't need to give you only that example, but there are many examples around the world where food is becoming under pressure. And when that happens, there will be everything could change overnight. So they say constant vigilance is the price of freedom.
Well, it's interesting you make that point, Emmanuel, because somebody made that point on a programme I was watching a few weeks ago, is that we think always in terms of geography and borders and the country as a kind of location. But the threat really in the future is more from cyber attacks, isn't it? And the defence budget actually does carve out a portion of that when it comes to what could happen in the future from a cyber attack, less so than a military attack.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, of course, you have to be very prepared for cyber attacks, and that's all very well. But in the end of the day, you have to have a defence of a country that's on the ground, troops on the ground. The way the Ukraine situation is developed, they have a certain level of cyber attacks, but their main problem is the invasion of 100,000 Russian troops across the border. So I don't think we can ever assume that we can just be worried about cyber attacks. I think that there's always a danger of an invasion from any direction at any time. And the most important thing is that the country needs to be defended. I mean, we spend $2 billion a year on drink. Is it? If we can spend that kind of money on drink, we can certainly spend more on defending the state and defending ourselves against attack. You cannot assume that we would be protected by other arrangements, NATO and so on. All these countries can share out countries among themselves. America at the moment is sharing out Ukraine between the Soviets and the United States, and they're actually, it's over the heads of the Ukrainian people, which is a disgrace, and it's something we never thought we'd see. But this brings back my point about the necessity for absolute vigilance and prepared to defend the state, because you can never tell who your friend is. Your friend today could be your enemy tomorrow.
Okay,
so
Emmanuel,
I would suggest that we wait to defend the country.
I hear you. David, what do you make of what Emmanuel is saying there?
His history is absolutely shocking. In 1990, Gorbachev was invited by Germany to look into the reunification of Germany. And Gorbachev said, yep, okay, as long as NATO doesn't come one inch further east. And that was all it was agreed to. In 1994, Clinton destroyed that agreement and brought in Czechoslovakia, Poland, and Romania, completely destroying the agreement that, and bringing NATO, bringing nuclear weapons up to Russia's borders. It was the Democrats who have always caused the wars. Go back to the First World War. Woodrow Wilson, a Democrat, he was president at the time of the First World War. If you look at every single war from 1914 to current, it's a Democrat who's in the White House. And people in Ireland, the press in Ireland is shocking on putting the truth into the atmosphere. The Ukraine situation is totally down to Clinton, Obama, and Biden.
There is a school of thought, David, and I've heard it before about that NATO expansion is ultimately what led to the situation we find ourselves in right now.
Well, I can show you the military experts.
Emmanuel, I'll let you in a minute. I'll let David finish his point. If you just hold on, Emmanuel,
sure,
I'll let
sure,
you.
Sure, fine, perfect. Okay, yeah.
Go ahead, David.
And, you know, if you go back to, say, 1169, the invasion of Ireland in 1169 was by the Normans. A guy born in Le Mans, France, Henry II, he was a Plantagenet king. He invaded Ireland in 1169. It wasn't English. It was the Normans and the Welsh. At that time, England hasn't had an English king or queen since 1066. In 1690, the lot that came in and fought at, if you look at the League of Augsburg, have you ever heard of the League of Augsburg, Gary?
I have just heard of it, David. Go on, but I want to bring this back to defence and less of a history lesson. What we're talking about
history. Ireland has always, the Irish leaders have always picked the wrong side and the wrong friends, the wrong, you know, you had Irish, in the Second World War, you had Irish dignitaries strolling between here and going from Ireland back to Germany in U-boats.
Yeah. Well, look, this is the situation we find ourselves in. And as you said, that's how you see what's happening in Ukraine at the moment.
I'm just saying history.
No, I hear you. A lot of people texting in with I suppose, a totally different take. And there is a lot of things to talk about. It's a very complex issue. But in terms of Ireland, I'm going to go back to Emmanuel. David was saying there, in terms of us being invaded, you know, is it likely to happen? Do we need to spend all this money on defence?
Well, I'll make two points. One is that in reply to David's interaction regarding Irish history, I think somebody said once, we don't need anyone walking over the broken glass of Irish history. We've enough pain to contend with that we've inherited. But if I can just bring them back to a very important agreement, if I can just bring you back to a very important agreement which was signed, I can't remember the exact date, called the Minsk Agreement. Ukraine had nuclear capability. Yep. They had nuclear weapons. And they made an agreement with United Kingdom. The United Kingdom, the USA, and Russia said they would guarantee Ukraine security. And we look at what happens today. What protection is Ukraine? Why didn't they move in immediately when 100,000 Russians moved onto the border? They should have immediately moved in. The UK, the USA should have moved in. But the joke, of course, is that the Russians guaranteed Ukraine security in the Minsk Agreement. So this brings me back to my point. You can never tell who the dangerous enemy is. You must defend your state. You have to spend a percentage of your for your national security. And we can't avoid that. We can't go around in an illusion that Ireland is a safe little place. And we're part of international affairs. We are in danger. And with climate change also, it is a critical matter that we protect our state.
Okay, I want you both to stay with me because I have to take a quick break here, but we're going to come back and talk more about Ireland and should we spend more on defence. Get in touch with the programme on 087-188-0008. Still lots to come, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back here in a minute. Welcome back to Nighttime Talk with Gary Brennan in for Niall Boylan tonight. Before the break, we were asking, should Ireland spend more on defence? I still have Emmanuel and David on the line. Got a couple of history lessons as well. So I just want to go back to David for a second because, David, we got the numbers on that. The active personnel in the Irish Army is 7,557 and the reserves 1,720. And back to your original point when it came to defence forces spending, you really think that we need to invest in the people rather than the hardware, so to speak?
Well, obviously you need both, but certainly at the moment, you can't even man what you've got at the moment. You can't offer an actual career path to anybody in the military. There's a guy in the village. He's an electrician. He's in for life. He repairs generators, sorts out generators and stuff like that, and that's what he's happy with. If you get anybody else, you've got to offer them some sort of progressive path.
And David, what about Emmanuel's point that he made about you just don't know in this world, the world we live in right now, you just don't know. So it's better to be ready just in case than not to be ready at all. Fail to prepare, prepare to fail.
What is the naval motto? The naval motto is, if you want peace, prepare for war.
Yeah.
That's exactly it. You've got to be prepared to put the cards down, to have the, you know, sort of like the Swiss or whoever, you know, sort of the Swiss can, everybody has done their military training. They have their weapons at home. They can, at a moment's notice, they can all be called back into service.
Stay there, David.
Which is a similar sort of way.
Yeah, stay with me.
Sorry.
I want to get Peter in on this because I want to get a fresh voice on the topic. Peter, you're very welcome to the programme. What do you think? Should Ireland be spending more on defence?
Well, Gary, I just think, like, over the last number of weeks, we've seen a drive in Ireland in particular. We've seen yesterday Micheál Martin, the cabinet signed off another €50 million to Ukraine. That's over €130 million that's given to Ukraine. And at the same time, it's just this drive. And it's just, I hear it through the media, you hear it through people talking about it. It's a big drive towards more militarism. And it's just, it's insane. Ireland we're a neutral country, right? And the important thing with all this argument that's been completely missed by everybody, it's even our constitution states that we should look for pacific settlements to international disputes. So we should be looking for peace. We never colonized or occupied anybody. And as a country that was colonized and is still occupied with our six counties up the north, we should look at an Ireland where we're proud of our neutrality, proud of our independence, and proud of our sovereignty. But unfortunately, we have a political establishment in Ireland, in particular, you look at Micheál Martin and Simon Harris, who are more interested in doing Zoom meetings with Emmanuel Macron today in Paris. Last weekend, Micheál Martin spent time at the Munich Security Conference trying to play war games with these warmongers. And Zelensky was talking about a European army. Like really, over a million and a half people have been killed in this war in Ukraine. And the big issue is that war has never served the interests of ordinary people. Ordinary people are the ones who suffer. And to counter what David said, he said peace through strength. How much militarism do we have to go to? How much of the military-industrial complex do we have to keep boosting the profits of? What ordinary people suffer and die, we can't pay for that. As one of your previous callers said, I think Gavin mentioned about the homeless crisis, the disaster we have here. We'll spend plenty of money on militarism and beefing up the profits of these big corporations making huge money, and ordinary people are the ones that suffer and die because of these policies. Like, I don't want any hand act their part in any political decisions that are made that are driving us towards more militarism and more war. We should be looking after the needs of our country here. And what that means is a proper discussion and debate about active neutrality, what that means. And I agree in terms of defence capabilities. and looking at having a discussion, an open and frank discussion around that. But without the scaremongering, without the fear, without the sort of even the Russophobia that's being pushed out there towards these threats, you know, these existential threats to people. It's this stuff that's been constantly pushed down people's throats. And I see it in the media over the last probably week in particular. It's been just heightened to put people in a state of fear and panic and on edge, and to say we need more weapons. We need to put troops on the ground in Ukraine. We need to keep the war going. We don't want to, even when Trump is trying to organize a peace deal with Putin, and they're just castigating Trump for looking for a peace deal. Look, I'm not a fan of Trump, or I'm not a fan of Putin, but the problem is that you need peace, and any moves towards peace is, you know, a good deal for ordinary people, because people don't want to live with terror, with fear, with the prospect of actually dying. For who benefits from it? Who benefits? Do ordinary people benefit from this? You know, put Michal Martin on the front lines, put Simon Harris on the front lines, put Zelensky on the front lines, put Putin on the front lines, put Trump on the front lines, or Biden. Don't put ordinary people as cannon fodder. We learned that, like, even in Irish history, one of your previous callers, I think Emmanuel, made a comment about going through the times of the famine as well. Over 100 years ago, there was a man by the name of John Redmond who was the head of the Irish Parliamentary Party, and he gave a speech in Woodenbridge, County Wicklow, and he divided the Irish volunteers, and he said, we have to go and fight in France so they don't fight us here. And what happened? Thousands upon tens of thousands of Irish men were killed on the battlefields of France. And we know the famous songs with the Furies, with the green fields of France and so forth as well. Died in for imperial powers. Didn't die for the interests of the people here.
And Peter, are you worried about our neutrality?
No. Oh, absolutely. Like, our neutrality is vital. But we need, as I said, we need a proper discussion about an active neutrality looks like. And that's a calm, irrational, fact-based debate, rather than this constantly. Like, I've heard it over the last few days, for instance, the subsea cables, this argument about subsea cables. Like, currently there's about 400 subsea cables around the world. A lot get damaged by ships in the normal run of events and stuff. And now you constantly hear this on the media in particular. There was a Russian ship spotted 400 miles off the coast of Ireland. Like, you know, like, this sort of stuff is just like, what's it all about? Like, you know, really fundamentally, why are they driving this sort of agenda? And, like, if you look at the back of it, Gary, and the truth is, right, the government have come out and said that the free market is worth defending and dying for. So it's basically about the profits for the big corporations, the billionaires, the very wealthy. And that's what war is, ultimately a racket in favour of these people who will always benefit from war. So I don't buy any of this nonsense about peace through strength. Oh, we need to beef up our, you know, more weapons. We need tanks. We need all this sort of stuff. Like, who benefits from all this? Who benefits? Like, the previous U.S. Secretary of Defense was a guy called Lloyd Austin, and he had one of the main shareholders in Raytheon. Like, so they're benefiting themselves from war, sitting back on their big fat pensions, while ordinary people are going off and being killed in the front lines. For what? Who would he been killed for? Be killed for so he can make huge, he can sit in the big mansion and laugh while ordinary people are the ones that suffer and die. And Micheál Martin, they are, to be honest with you, they're cowardly leaders in Ireland. They're more interested in going over to Brussels and getting their orders rather than looking after the people here with all the crises we have. Like, last 2 weeks ago, we had people without energy all around the west of Ireland for weeks after that storm. That was horrific. Like, we see all the stuff with the kids on the scoliosis surgery. We see loads of domestic issues that I think Gavin mentioned earlier as well that aren't being addressed. The cost of living disaster, the housing crisis, all these issues. Like, and this is a country that has 2 billionaires have the same amount of money as 50% of the population, the bottom 50% of the population. Like, you know, people need to wake up to this, like, and think, like, we've been taken for mugs by the political establishment.
So, Peter, do you feel, I get the impression that you feel that when our politicians and our government put their head above the parapet, so to say, and get involved in international conflicts and politics that a lot of people would say don't concern them, and then talk about increasing our defence budget, you think we're playing with fire?
Yeah, I think... Fundamentally, I think what they're doing is we're just yes men for Europe. They just follow along with what they've been told in Europe. If you saw the programme for government, Gary, recently, a big part of that program of government, and they said it in all their anecdotes, Micheál Martin and Simon Harris, we have to be a pro-European Union party. So all those independents have signed up to that. And what that really means, fundamentally means, if you look at the European Union, you have Ursula von der Leyen, who's an unelected leader of the European Commission, president of the European Commission. 70% of our legislation comes from the lobbyists who lobby the European Commission, and fundamentally that's transposed into Irish law. So essentially what they are is just gatekeepers for the European Union. So whatever the European Union decides what they're going to do, they're going to go along with it. And they've done the same. When did we ever learn? Back in 2008, 2010, the bank bailout. What happened? Ireland was saddled with nearly 45% of the total European banking debt. We led to austerity. And what happened then? The housing crisis, everything got worse and worse. And now we're doing the same thing with the Ukrainian refugee crisis. 110,000 Ukrainians came to Ireland. Ireland were the first ones to put their hands up and say, we'll take whatever, we'll take what, you know, we'll support them as long as it takes, take everybody in. And they created housing out of thin air, modular housing. People were given everything hand over fist, and yet the people who were here weren't being supported. So they pit people against each other. And of course, anybody who flees any sort of war, you try and support, but you have to cut your cloth to suit your measure.
Peter, I've only got a couple of minutes left on this, so I just want to get a quick opinion off you. Do you think we're heading towards an EU army?
Absolutely. That's the drive. The drive is towards a European army. That's always been the agenda with the European Union. And now, in particular, with Trump, for instance, pivoting towards China, there's a drive towards the European army. Zelensky said at the weekend, now at the moment, and like, they're going to who benefits from it? Like, they're going to move towards more militarism and a drive towards getting boots on the ground, for instance, whatever peace is arranged in Ukraine, and in particular to drive Ireland towards more militarism. They've done it through NATO. Ireland were involved in a thing called the Partnership for Peace, which is ironic with NATO, a Partnership for Peace. It's a military alliance, and they're slowly eroding Irish neutrality. And David's right. The RAF control Irish airspace. We've had flights coming through Shannon Airport for years and years by the United States. The Irish government has turned a blind eye to it. We've had, you know, huge incursions by warships, NATO warships, coming into Irish ports over the last few years. That's been ignored by people, and people are sort of a bit. They're to be honest with you, a lot of people have enough on their plate without worrying about what's going on in terms of neutrality in the bigger picture. But it is important, because without deciding your policy of the state, it should be decided by the people of the state, and that's in our constitution also as well. And that means that ties in with our independence, it ties in with our sovereignty, and it ties in with our neutrality. Ireland has a strong and proud record of being a neutral country. Like, Frank Aiken, if you ever heard of him, Gary, who was a fantastic foreign affairs minister, actually a Fianna Fáil person involved, and they've moved a million miles from him. But he was against any more nuclear expansionism back in the 50s, against the non-proliferation treaty, which was a fantastic move during that period of time. Like, Ireland should be going back to using their voices to be for diplomacy, for peace, and standing up against war, because we've never colonised anybody. We're not like the British Empire. We're not like the US. We're not like any other empire. Like, we just want to live in peace and stand up for the needs of ordinary people. I think that's the important thing that people should stand up for.
Sounds good to me, Peter. Yeah, sounds good to me.
Ordinary people.
Well, we're out of time, Peter, but no, that sounds good to me. Peace, that's ultimately what we want, isn't it? And a lot of texts, a lot of calls in about this tonight. Thanks for that, Peter, and thank you, Emmanuel. I didn't get back to you, I didn't have time, so sorry about that. But I'm afraid I'm going to have to move on, because I've got the news coming up, and then after the break we're going to be talking about a very interesting topic. Have we lost our manners? I want you all to get your evening jackets on for that one. Before I head there, I just want to read out one of the texts that came in. We should be spending more money on our Gardaí start at home. We can't afford the military hardware like most countries. We should be prioritising our borders, airports, seaports. We're a small island and we're fair game for all the invaders from around the world arriving here every day in their hundreds. Pakistan and India have nuclear capability. African countries are better equipped with weapons. There you go. I'm sure we'll get back to that subject.
Now, real people, real opinions, Nighttime Talk.
Ireland's classic hits radio.